Hello and welcome to another episode of Behind the Media. Happy Valentine's Day. Today we are with my friend and an amazing editor, Allie Walansky.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. I'm so excited to have you on. We were in the studio before hitting record, and for 10 minutes already, we've been shooting this shit, and I feel like it's already going to be such a good episode just based on the stuff we didn't actually record, just from our conversation.
Well, I feel like we're kind of like Valentine, like, by anyway, so.
Literally. So guys, Allie is a food and travel journalist with more than 2 decades of experience at dozens of online and print publications like Forbes, Today Show, Food Network, Travel and Leisure, and more. She was rated the #1 food journalist by Muckrock in 2022 and one of their top 10 journalists overall in 2023 and 2024. Congrats, Allie.
Thank you.
Allie has a daily Substack newsletter where she shares all her current projects, source needs, and industry insights. And in light of it being Valentine's Day, Allie just dropped a hair accessories collection with RPZL. You can shop at rpzl.com. They're so cute. If you follow me on Instagram, I've been wearing them to Fashion Week all over the place. They're cute little bows. You have everything, and I'm so excited for that collection.
You look so cute. I saw the photo of you in the little lily bows the other day, and you looked adorable.
Thank you. I'm obsessed with them. You and Lisa Richards have done a great job with that collection.
It's the most like, I feel like it's a very rom-com season between like Taylor and Travis and Valentine's Day. We're all about hearts and flowers all the time.
I know. Also in light of Super Bowl, Taylor and Travis, we love.
I know. And I'm normally, I do not know anything about football at all, but I was watching because like, it's just so cute. It's like watching the Hallmark Channel, but way sexier.
Way sexier. Hotter actors.
Oh my God. So hot. Much hotter.
I love how we're already talking about hot actors. Allie and I actually really started connecting because we were DMing back and forth about Outlander and Jamie Frazier, Sam Heughan, if you guys are a fan. Allie and I are the biggest fans. I'm literally on the street of Vegas in the sweltering heat on a business trip, and I'm DMing her back and forth like, oh my God, he's so hot.
I feel like that was like our moment. Like that was our meet cute where we were talking about that.
It was, and I am obsessed, and now we don't shut up about Sam.
And I hope that show comes back soon because I'm honestly going throughout Droughtlander.
I know. Seriously. We need it back. But back on track here.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us how you got to, I mean, we can make this a podcast about Outlander. Why don't we just behind Outlander, behind the scenes of what Allie and Juliana think about Jamie Frazier and Claire.
That would have to be our primetime version.
Seriously. But tell us how you got started in the food and bev industry.
Sure. So I was actually at first a beauty writer, which is why this whole headband thing feels very full circle. And so beauty writing kind of segued into spa writing, which is brings you to travel because spas are in hotels very often. And when I was travel writing, I was like, wait a second, the best part of travel is eating and drinking by far. And so somehow I became a food and bev writer organically that way. And while I still obviously write about travel and write about hair and stuff, my #1 love is right now martinis and food.
Martinis and food. I'm not going to lie. I've tried to be a martini girl. I've sipped my friend's martinis, dirty, neat. I don't know if neat's even a martini. I don't know. Whatever it is, I've sipped it, and I can't do it, Allie. So kudos to you. I know you have your dirty Allie at a few spots in the city, your signature cocktail, but I can't do it.
Well, my mission for 2024 is to find the martini that's right for you. It's like finding the perfect lipstick. Once you do, you just haven't found your martini yet as your friend. I'm going to do that for
sounds,
you.
That literally sounds like something Carrie Bradshaw would say.
That would be like, I mean, I totally wanted to be Carrie when I was growing up. I mean, her life was not very realistic, but I totally wanted to be her.
You basically are. You're writing like her. You basically are Carrie Bradshaw.
A more Brooklyn version.
Brooklyn Carrie.
Yeah, cool.
So you write for some very highly respected outlets, as we mentioned in your intro. In your opinion, how does an article in Forbes, Travel and Leisure, whatever it is, have an effect on an emerging food, beverage brand, or venue?
I think that it could put them in front of more eyeballs. Like sometimes, very often actually, I'm writing about cocktails or dishes that might be at a small place in a small town in the Midwest, and they're not necessarily getting the national attention that they should. And I think it can make people, when they are traveling to those areas, more likely to want to try that restaurant that they may have never heard of the chef or the destination. And so it just gets them a more wider compass of views, which I'm really happy to do.
Yeah. And have any brands or venues shared success stories resulting from your coverage?
Oh, absolutely. They definitely have said that people have come into their restaurant or their bar and mentioned that they saw that I wrote about them or wanting to try a dish that I wrote about, which is very exciting for me.
I also think from a PR perspective, it really, really helps having coverage from those outlets for investors, or if they're trying to go into retail, like let's say it's a alcohol company and they're trying to get into Target or liquor stores. I feel like having those credible articles in Forbes and a HuffPost, those really just offer a stamp of approval. And especially, obviously, they're super well written. You put a lot of research into that. You're super mindful. So I feel like that can really just show investors or to show external sources those articles and show that you do have eyes on the brand. It goes such a long way.
I think also people, when they see an article in, let's say, Forbes, like, oh, try out this restaurant in Kansas City, for example. And all of a sudden that means so much more to them than going on to, like, you know, a Yelp, because it's like so-called like an expert opinion. And I think that makes them a little bit more of an idea of, oh, I want to try this. This food writer said that this is the best salad she's ever had or whatever.
Yeah, I think so too. And I would take that recommendation, like you said, over Yelp or something on Open Table, because, oh, like she's already vetted it, or she gave the stamp of approval. So this kind of passed an even like Yelp, anybody can be on Yelp, but to be in a Forbes or, like we said, these articles that you write for, I would absolutely go with somebody who's been covered in that versus just even something that has a good rating on Yelp.
Oh, yeah. And it whets your appetite. Like if I share a photo of a beautiful cocktail and then you happen to be in that place, you're going to remember that more than word of mouth.
That's so true. That's why images are so important, and just like painting a picture and a brand story.
Mm-hmm.
So in a saturated market, when you're getting asked to write about a venue, food, a beverage brand, alcohol brand, what are you looking for about that brand in order to cover it? And for example, I'm talking aesthetics, like packaging. What does the bottle look like? Is the venue a nice aesthetic? Does it have to be a 5-star or can it be? Does it have to be like a white table venue or no? Brand founder story. All culminates for you to be like, okay, this is worthy of coverage?
I think that it hits a lot of elements, and it totally doesn't have to be a fancy place. In fact, some of my most fun nights have been over like pizza and wine. So it's like, I am not that fancy. I think it has to be delicious, be unique, be fun. If there's a good founder story that is interesting, or they're doing like a creative cocktail menu or food menu, that's going to go a long way. And location-wise, it doesn't have to be in a major metropolitan city. It could be anywhere, as long as what they're doing makes for a good story.
That's good. And so when it comes to, you write for beverage brands too, right? Sometimes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, would you, like if the bottle is like weird to hold or like doesn't look nice, like would that obviously deter? So I'm kind of thinking like beauty PR wise, like I know some editors in beauty will absolutely not cover a brand that has like a really ugly bottle. Cause why would they want to cover that? You know, like really ugly packaging.
I mean, I feel like ugly packaging at least could still be kind of unique and different and standout packaging. But I think it would also come down to, if I'm sent that bottle of vodka and it's not the prettiest bottle, but it's a vodka I really enjoy, like when I drink it, I would still totally write about it.
Okay, that's great. So it's definitely quality of whatever it is that's being pitched to you or offered to you or you're experiencing.
I mean, I've been sent wine that wasn't the prettiest bottle and yet was delicious wine. And I've sent wine in beautiful bottles that I ended up thinking was gross. So it definitely, do not judge a book by its cover.
That's so interesting. And this reminded me of something we talked about offline, like just in our general lives. Because I asked you, like, okay, Allie, like, what if someone sends you to their restaurant and so sad, God forbid, it's disgusting restaurant. It's horrible service, or like, you, it's just not a vibe. And she said, I'll let you say it, but she said like the most heartwarming, positive, endearing thing. What did you say to that?
Well, I think there's something good even in a place where there's not, you know, it's not good overall. Like, I once went to a pretty famous steakhouse and I did not enjoy their steaks at all. But they had a really delicious, like, cream spinach side. And I ended up writing about the cream spinach side. And they actually had a good martini there also. But I was also once on a press trip, and it was to an all-inclusive resort, and their food was terrible, but they had a really good mushroom soup on the buffet, and I wrote about the soup. So I feel like you could always find the diamond in the rough wherever you go. And at the end of the day, a restaurant review is a sample for consideration. So if you have nothing nice to say, you just don't say anything at all.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's nice that you are able to kind of find the diamonds in the rough, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely. And there always is something. Like, maybe the steakhouse doesn't have the best steak I've ever had, but maybe they have a nice wine list. Maybe they had a really good chocolate brownie for dessert. There's always something that they do well. And if it's not the food, it's the cocktails, or it's the service, or the ambiance, or whatever. You'll find it.
I like that. And also, these people are still putting in so much effort to, like, hope you have the best experience ever. So that's so nice that it's not their fault. The steak's horrible. I mean, come on. It's a big steakhouse. Hopefully you get better at it. But still, like, it's still everyone's just trying to do their best here, trying to do their job. So that's nice that you can still find those positives.
And taste is subjective. Sometimes a place that I love, someone else doesn't love. And I never, never want to be responsible for hurting someone's business ever. So, like, I'm going to try to find something good to write about that people will enjoy, that I enjoyed. But if not, I'm just not going to include them this time. And I'll include them some other time when there is something positive to write about. I don't write negative reviews, like, ever.
So good. And so you do get invited to a ton of brand events. Just speaking of you getting invited places, what gets you excited to attend an event versus declining an invitation?
I mean, I have to say I decline most invitations. I probably get like a dozen invites a day, and I maybe go to one or two events a week, just because there's no time. So if it's a restaurant that I've been dying to try, if I know that I'm going to have a friend there, that goes a long way. Something like Uber vouchers matter a lot, just because, like, if I know it's going to be not expensive or hard to get there, I'm more likely to try to get there.
I think that's something, as a publicist, I see this, but brands might not even think about or understand sometimes, is that if it's an event is off your clock, off the clock, especially if you're a freelancer, even if you're not a freelancer, even if you work at a top publishing house, like, you're not given budget to go to mm-hmm. these events. Like, you are taking that Uber by yourself, or you're taking that subway late at night from Brooklyn. Like, it's, you are making the effort to, like, go in your free time for them. So an Uber code, especially if, like, a brand and a PR perspective, especially if you're looking for coverage, like, sending $100 Uber code is not, it doesn't even need to be that much in some cases. Like, just giving an Uber code shows so much effort, especially if you're looking for this insane media value back. And that, and to me, like, if I invite a bunch of people, like, I want to make sure you guys are coming as much as I can. Obviously, you can't force people to come, but sending an Uber code is the easiest way to, like, guarantee less drop off.
I always tell people that, like, yeah, if I receive an Uber voucher for your event, there is no way in heck I'm going to cancel. It's like Beyonce said, you put a ring on it. Like, you locked me in. And I think that's why people should do it, like, work it out for their own benefit, so they know they're going to have people show up. But also, yeah, to your point, if I'm paying for my own Uber to go to someone's press dinner, it could conservatively cost me $50 each way. And, like, I don't make the kind of money where I could afford to spend $100 to go to a press dinner. Like, I just don't. And so it makes a big difference if I'm going to say yes or no. And there are things with Uber vouchers that I don't accept, because I'm just not interested, don't have time. But if there's an Uber voucher and I accept, then I'm going to show up.
Yeah. And you also said you go to maybe 2 events a week, but I'm sure sometimes it's more. Like, what if it's food week? I don't know if food week's a thing, restaurant week. So let's say like that's 4 or 5 times a week. That's $500 minimum you're spending on Ubers just for that evening, just for those events. Like, let's say another journalist might be going to more. So that is so much money. Let's just say it's 4 events a week. Let's say it's $400 a week. That's an insane amount a month to be spending out of pocket. So obviously some events they're not going to choose to go to if some events aren't offering Uber codes.
It's a major, major thing. And I understand sometimes a restaurant or a destination or an agency's budget is tight. And I totally respect that. And not everyone is coming from the distance I'm coming from, but that is a major deciding factor. Like, am I going to have out of pocket to get there, or is that covered? And if it's covered and I'm interested in what the event is or where it is, then I'm more likely to go.
And do you have to be a well-known brand for you to attend an event or have interest in covering?
Oh, not at all. No, not at all. Like, in fact, some of the most fun have been the less well-known, where I feel like I'm like in on a secret now.
That's so fun. And so when brands invite you to these events, when should brands expect coverage from a journalist and when not? So like, for example, if the Four Seasons invites you for a 5-night stay in Bali, do you guarantee coverage for that? Like, do you feel obligated to cover? Do you kind of chat beforehand? Like, this is kind of like what you'll be able to expect if I accept this stay, versus a restaurant offering you $20 to try their tacos and expecting an article. So like, when can brands kind of like expect coverage versus not?
So the rub of it all is, as a freelancer, I can never under any circumstances guarantee coverage. It doesn't matter where I'm traveling, where I'm eating. If I have a good experience, I will absolutely make it my business to be able to cover it. I'll pitch it out to my editors. I will find a story for it. But yeah, I can't ever guarantee, because like, even if I have an assignment in advance, assignments get cut, editors leave publications end. It's a tough world right now. But so I never make any promises. And if people are looking for promises, I say I can't accept.
That makes sense. I feel like from a PR perspective, when we're doing new business conversations and they're like, well, how many articles can I get a month? I'm like, a good publicist, in my opinion, will never give you that number, because it's impossible. And because of what you just said. So we are the middleman. So working with somebody like you, you can't confirm it to us. So we can't confirm it to our client. We're all obviously going to try to do our best. That's the goal here. And we do our best, and we do have amazing results, both of us. But you just can't guarantee anything.
You can't guarantee it. But at this point, every press trip I've ever been on, I've at some point covered in some way. So I always do cover it. But if they beforehand are like, can you guarantee you're going to be an X outlet? And I'm like, I can't. I'm sorry.
And that being said, timelines too. Like you said, at some point you've covered them. Like if you go to a trip to Ireland, like maybe you won't be able to cover that beverage brand the next week, but maybe 2 months down the line, you have this amazing, long, beautiful article. So I feel like also some brands, just to manage expectations, sometimes you're really just building that relationship. And then the perfect, like it's St. Patrick's Day coming up. Like maybe you'll have a fantastic way for them to be included in that. So it's all totally about moments in time.
Oh, absolutely. I went to Vegas for a restaurant opening last year, and I've written about that at this point like 3 or 4 times in different publications, just because the opportunities arose. And some were within a week after, and others were months later. Like, when it happens, it happens.
And that's also a testament to good relationship building, that you're still writing about them months later, which is the goal here. Like, you're, from a brand perspective, you're investing in that journalist to come, you're giving them an experience. And so you can only hope that you are a normal person, like really have a genuine relationship or good relationship with these people, that they keep coming back for more.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also it is like recognition, like, you know, you experience a place, you go to a restaurant or you go to a property and you experience it. It's going to be top of mind when you have a story that's a fit, just because you've been there, you've done that, you've eaten their state. You've had their cocktails. You've slept in their beds. And like, so when you have an assignment, that will be what pops into your mind because it was experiential versus something in your inbox.
That is a perfect segue into my next question. For a brand or venue that might just be starting out and doesn't have a lot of budget, what would you recommend to get a journalist's attention? So like you said, like hands-on experience obviously is the first thing top of mind, but do you have anything else to say there?
Yeah, I mean, definitely hands-on experience. And it doesn't necessarily have to be something as straightforward as a dinner. Like I was recently invited, this cute little Italian restaurant that I've actually written about in the past is having a pasta making class, like with their chef. And I think that those kind of interactive moments where you, you know, make a cocktail with a bartender or cook with their chef, that helps a lot. But if they're like at the other end of the country, and then I'm not going to be going there, you know, reach out to me on Instagram, get to know me, like, you know, offer like a Zoom tutorial with the chef. Anything is possible. You could always connect in a way that doesn't have to blow your budget if you don't have budget. Like it shouldn't be about that.
And you said reach out to you on Instagram, but I want to preface for publicists listening, reach out as a friend or as somebody genuinely getting interested and knowing you are like, oh my God, I love that air fryer chicken, because I know you cook a lot of stuff in the air fryer. That's also how I got a lot of my recipes, the chili recipe you sent me to, like things like that. But pitching you in the DMs is a no,
and definitely don't pitch on the DMs, but just like reach out as a person. It comes down to name recognition again. Like I always try to do, like when I visit a city, I'll like, you know, plop myself down in a bar and I'll be like, hey, like come meet me, we'll have a drink or a hug or a selfie. If I can't do that because we haven't met, Instagram is a sort of like, you know, virtual way of doing that. So yeah, be like, oh, I have a dog also, or I like that TV show also, or oh, I just got an air fryer. Like, what should I do with it? Like, just connect with me as a person. And then when I see you in my inbox with the 800 other emails, I'll recognize your name.
Ali literally gets 500 to 1,000 emails a day.
I really do. But because I love you so much, yours are the first ones I open every day because, you know, face recognition.
Which is insane. I feel literally so grateful every time you also go. So let's say she has brands pitch her all the time for a cocktail roundup. She had maybe 40 brands that she covered in a Valentine's one we just did, or the Mean Girls one. I don't know which one it was. She took time to send me the link via email, which is insane. Like in a great way. Like I'm so grateful for that, that you like not even, obviously as a publicist, we search it, we monitor, but you took time to send it immediately to it. Like you're so mindful with your time and you still have thousands of emails over there. So you're such a good person, like especially building a relationship with. So I want to say I do appreciate that.
I mean, I appreciate you. And I feel like you work so hard to like get everything together with my stupid fast deadlines. Of course, I'm going to send you a link.
No, it's so nice. A lot of people don't do that.
Well, there's a lot of nice people out there.
But that being said, you have obviously, you said tight deadlines. You have this amazing resource for publicists, brands, anyone who's listening in. Tell us about your Substack. I feel like you were one of the first to like really have it take off. Why is it a good resource for brands? Why is it helpful to you? Why is it helpful to publicists? I mean, I'll tell you why it's helpful for publicists. Like I had my clients covered just from your Substack, and you have to really read it the day it comes because some of those deadlines are the next day.
Oh, sometimes it's even later that day. It's crazy. Well, you know, for many, many years, publicists would be emailing me and they'd be like, hey, do you have a distribution list so I could see what you're working on? And I didn't for the longest time. And then I'm like, but maybe this is something I should have, because I know there's resources out there. There's the Facebook groups. There's, you know, there was Harrow. There's, you know, Quoted. Those are all great things. But I wanted to have somewhere in one place where I could just send out a quick and dirty email and be like, this is what I'm working on today. This is what published today. This is this fun event I went to last night, and this was the takeaway. And it ended up being so much bigger than I expected. I really thought it was just going to be like a to-do list kind of email. And it became almost like a community, and I'm so grateful for it. And yeah, now I send it out 6 days a week, and people seem very receptive.
No, it's amazing. Like I read them every morning. It's so funny. The other day she was like, oh, you should check out this thing in my Substack. And I'm like, hello. I sent her a picture. I'm like, I'm already on it. I'm already looking at it, already viewing.
I love that so much.
No, because there's such good stuff in it. And I love that other journalists are doing it too, because for PR, it's so easy. Like, we're not annoying asking you every 5 seconds, like, what are you working on? What are you working on? What are you working on? Instead, you're telling us what you're working on. And if it's not on there, don't pitch it unless it's an incredible, amazing, different, unique story. Of course, don't like be discouraged to pitch, but I'm not going to send you something wild. Like when I see you have 20 pending things in this certain category.
Well, I'm trying to make it easier because I understand how busy publicists are. And like that way you could look at my Substack and be like, oh, this thing that was listed yesterday isn't there anymore. So like now I don't have to waste my time pitching it. So it helps you streamline also. It saves everyone time. You know, if something went live, you know how to pitch for those cocktail roundups. And honestly, there's still people who ignore my instructions, but that helps me choose the ones that I use.
I was also going to say you make it so straightforward for publicists. Like it's a format. It's so easy. It's quick. It's easy to gather. It's the same every time. And so that makes it easier for Ali as a journalist, but also publicists and the brands we're working with. Like now, I mean, I work with some amazing restaurants here in the city, like Odd Sister, Jackdaw, Printer's Alley. Now that their team knows exactly what format you want it in. When I say, hey, Ali has something, like, let's get it in quick. They know exactly what to do. And so it's just like a well-oiled machine now.
It makes it so much easier. And especially since, you know, very often I'm sending out these emails when I'm traveling. So I might do it from a plane or from some hotel room somewhere. Or I've sent them out from like the back of a van in between vineyards and random places. Which I know sounds very jet setter, but actually it's not. And like being able to send a quick email out versus having to go to all those other avenues, it makes it easier for me also.
Yeah, and it's easier for you to kind of categorize it because you ask what the subject should be, and it's so easy to just search things when it's in that format. So for PR or anybody submitting to Ali's Substack, listen to the directions because it's like sending in a resume. Like it's the first way to chop off if the GPA is bad or if this is wrong, if there's a typo, it's the first way to chop you out of that pile. If you aren't following the simple directions, why would she cover you?
Absolutely. Like, you know, when I do those cocktail roundups, I might be pitched like 500 cocktails for a roundup of 40 restaurants. And how I weed people out is honestly, I ask for an image. They don't send an image, or they send me an image of like 8 different cocktails in a bar and I don't know which one is the one you're pitching me. Or I ask for a bartender quote and you don't tell me the name of the person that's being quoted. It's like silly little things like that. If you need to get into a smaller number, it makes it easier for you, sad to say.
Yeah, because also like you don't have time for follow up. Again, if you have 500 emails and you're getting this out quickly, you don't have time to be like, hey, so you sent me this cocktail that I don't have a visual of, so I don't even know if it looks good. I don't even know if you're going to take a good picture, but can you send me a photo of it too so I can include it in my article? Like you're just going to go with one of the ones that did send you an amazing photo and it's all packaged up perfectly.
Yeah, and also it's sort of redundant. Like if I'm doing a National Lobster Day roundup and I'm like, I'm looking for really fun, unique dishes with lobster, and then you send me like a lobster roll or a steamed lobster, that's not unique. It might be delicious. I would be happy to eat your steamed lobster, but it's not unique. So I think also part of the instructions is like being self-aware. You know, is it unique? Is it creative? Is it something that exists on every single seafood restaurant menu? Like that's going to be a big part of if you get into the story or not.
Yeah. Also for a lot of the beverage and cocktail roundups or dining roundups you do. Also, like I'm sure if you're asking for a cool and unique cocktail and someone sends you a glass of champagne, you're going to be like, hello, like,
yeah.
Why would I include this? Why is what?
Yeah. That happened. I did one for National Margarita Day and like some people like got the message and sent really creative spins on like margaritas. Others sent the average generic margarita we've all had 87,000 times.
Yeah, so be unique and have something of quality. Those are some good takeaways. And then as someone who writes for every hotspot, what are your favorite quality restaurants, bars in New York and then maybe nationally and globally?
Ooh. Well, funny, we were just talking about Odd Sister because I feel like that was one I really fell in love with this year, which is where my birthday party was.
It was so fun. We were there so late just drinking and having fun.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I still think about those Naughty Alleys, which is my other favorite signature cocktail. I really like, as far as restaurants, I'm a big fan of Strip House, which is a steakhouse that's downtown. It's very, like, bordello themed, very sexy. I like that a lot. I'm very, very into steakhouses in general. Like, I feel like a good martini and like a good steak and sides is like probably my death row meal.
I would say the same minus the martini, maybe like a red
wine.
That's
okay.
And a steak.
No one found your martini yet. I'm still working on that.
We're definitely steak gals.
We're totally steak gals. Maybe because we're not dairy gals.
Yeah, no. F dairy.
Exactly. We don't need it.
Behind the media, a conversation with Juliana and Allie. Like, F dairy.
I have some exceptions, but in general, I'm team. Don't need dairy also.
Absolutely not. And for fun, what was one of your favorite interviews or some of the most favorite interviews you've ever done?
I once got to interview Sarah Michelle Gellar. She at one point did a line of baking mixes called Foodstirs. This was a couple years ago. And I was dying because Buffy is my all-time favorite show of all time. So that was amazing. It wasn't an in-person interview. It was email, but didn't matter. I nearly died over email. I did interview Sam Hugan.
I know. I was waiting for you to say it.
I know. I loved interviewing him. But like definitely Buffy was very exciting also.
Buffy and Sam. Buffy and Jamie.
That would be an amazing fight sequence if like, you know, they were like fighting evil together. Because they kind of both fight evil.
They do. They're different eras, but maybe Jamie can go into travel to through the stones to Buffy's time.
Well, we do think that he does astral projection, so.
What are some upcoming trends you're predicting for the food and bev industry?
I think we're having a moment in like small luxuries right now. Or it's like, I don't know if it's upcoming so much as it's already here. But all over the place, I'm seeing examples of let's take something super opulent like caviar and make it like pair it with something a lot less fancy. So like a caviar baked potato, caviar and fried chicken, like caviar pizza. It's everywhere right now. So I think people are like taking luxury concepts and making them like more approachable. And I kind of love that.
I like that a lot.
It's really fun. And I mean, obviously, I'll still go like fancy and do my caviar bumps with my martinis and oysters and all that. But I love that you don't have to. Like, there's no rules anymore.
That's really cool. It's just a different thing to experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I always thought that like caviar and potato chips were good. So I guess we were ahead of our time.
They are good. I would agree. And what's something you're super excited about in the near future, just personally or just any fun projects you have coming up?
Well, the only travel I have coming up the next couple of weeks is actually I'm doing a girlfriend's press trip to Phoenix with Jill and Alice, who also both have Substacks.
Fun.
Shout out. Yes. And so it's really cool because, like, you know, a lot of us girls, we like text all the time, you know, about like work stuff and writing stuff and Substack stuff. But we live in different parts of the country, so we never get to spend like time together. And the three of us have a group text every single day. We text all day, but we've actually never all three been in the same place at the same time.
Wow.
So I'm very excited about that. We're doing that in March. And I've met them both, but they've never met each other, and we've never all been somewhere together. So I am very excited about that. That's the only trip I have coming up right now. But who knows? Might be something in my inbox right now.
No, that's really fun. I hope we'll manifest it. You'll get this insane trip after this.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing is, believe it or not, just like with event invites and dinner invites, I say no to like 80% of trip invites.
That's crazy to think about.
I say no to trip invites every single day because, you know, either it's not a fit for what I write about or it's timing, scheduling, or like, you know, all those matters. Like to get away from your desk and not be like, you know, here all day writing, it has to be something that I think that is either going to be ROI-wise, something I'll get a lot of out of content-wise or a life-changing moment-wise or just fun-wise. And a lot of them aren't.
True. That's actually a good thing to note on quickly is that if you do accept a trip and you're gone for 5 days, like you still are responsible for getting your deadlines on other articles that you're working on. Like you're still working. You can't just pause for 5 days because you work for yourself. So then you're just not going to get paid. So
right.
Accepting these trips does come with this responsibility that you still have to get your stuff done.
Yeah. In fact, that's why I hardly ever even go to daytime events in the city because, like, you know, if you have a trip with an itinerary, they usually schedule you pretty much all day long, which means either you have to start your day pre-dawn working before your day starts or come back to your room after like a 4-hour dinner with wine pairings and work then. And this is a first world problem. I understand that. But also, you're a human being with a depleting gas tank of energy, and there's only so much you can do. So I definitely consider that. And also, so there's definitely the expense of, yes, it's a free trip and they're covering everything, but you've got to get to airports. You got to buy Wi-Fi on planes. Like, all these things are not covered while you're also missing out on income. So it's not the free vacation that it looks like to people on social media.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I didn't even think about that, like the timing of writing these articles. Like, it's either going to be at 12 a.m. when you get back to the hotel and you're tipsy off of wine that they gave you this amazing 7-course dinner, or it's going to be in the morning. And also, you're a writer, so you have to be creative and have your creative juices flowing. And at 5 a.m. or like waking up before dawn or 6 a.m. because you have something at 9, that's probably not like going to be your top headspace to write an amazing piece.
No. And I mean, and I do write from trips all the time. I have no choice, but definitely I'm not going to be writing with like the volume that I normally write when I'm home. I'm not going to be pitching new stories because just there's no time. So I totally say yes to press trips, but they have to be something that's really worthwhile. And I definitely don't do more than one a month.
Totally makes sense. Allie, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. Where can our audience find you, read more, sign up for your Substack, everything?
Oh, sure. So my Substack is alliewalansky.substack.com. So that's AlliewalanSky. And I send it out every single day, except for Sundays. And my Instagram is where I share what I'm cooking, what I'm eating, where I'm going. And that's also just Allie Walansky.
Easy, easy as that. And give her a quick Google. You'll be able to find her anywhere and everywhere. Thank you so much. I loved having you on. And I feel like this is just going to be a really insightful conversation for brands, publicists, venues, hotels, everything. So we really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I love spending Valentine's Day with you.